back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. In the least surprising news of all time, Luke Kuechly officially named a pro scout for the Carolina Panthers. Least surprising news of all time. You know, seven-time Pro Bowler retires. You want the guy around the organization. I don't know. I would have to think that he's probably... Tyler, you got to keep me honest because you're strangely an expert on this team. Luke Kuechly on the Panthers' Mount Rushmore? All right.
I would say yes.
So
I
we
think
got
it's,
Steve Smith.
Yes.
Right?
Julius Peppers.
Julius Peppers.
Kuechly and Cam Newton.
Okay.
Would be my four.
Cam Newton. Okay.
Yeah.
So Jake Delhomme doesn't make it?
No.
Greg Olsen doesn't make
actually,
it.
Actually, I may substitute Cam Newton, despite the fact that at his peak,
MVP.
He was MVP. Right.
Uh-huh.
I may substitute Cam Newton's highs for the longevity of Thomas Davis.
Okay.
So I would go Kuechly, Davis, Peppers, and Steve Smith.
All right. Okay. So no Olsen, no John Casey, who also could have been on there.
I'm not putting a kicker on a Mount Rushmore.
I figured you might not. I thought about the other wide receiver, Musa Muhammad. I thought about D'Angelo Williams. I also thought about Chris Jenkins, defensive tackle.
It's a good one, too. That was a good front four.
Yeah.
Really good front four.
John Beeson also deserves a mention. The first running back that I can remember was Steven Davis.
Steven Davis, yes. Big
and
guy.
Deshaun Foster. Yeah, it was the thunder and lightning
yep.
kind of situation. I don't think that anyone's knocking Kuechly off, though. I keep looking. I don't think that Kuechly's getting knocked off the Mount Rushmore.
I don't think so. Like I said, I've got five guys for four spots.
Yeah.
And you could go with Davis or Cam Newton, and it doesn't... Like, I'm not going to argue you either way.
But Steve Smith's the most important player.
Correct.
Right, in the franchise. And it might be Kuechly next.
Like, more than Peppers?
The only reason I say maybe more than Peppers is because Peppers played elsewhere. Like, Peppers...
Yeah, but weren't his best years in Carolina?
For sure.
Like,
absolutely.
He had a good year, a decent year in Green Bay, a decent year, a couple years in Chicago. But, I mean, yeah, I get maybe. Yeah.
I mean, he played for the Panthers twice, by the way, because
yes.
he came back in 2017, 2018. Green Bay, he spent he spent 4 years in Chicago and then 3 years in Green Bay. Before that meant that he spent one more season in Carolina than not in Carolina before those last 2 years. I don't know. 10 years in Carolina, but it's probably Peppers, especially considering the quality of player that he is.
Right.
But I don't know. There you go. He's joining the scouting department. What do you make of great players joining scouting departments?
I'm often very skeptical about it.
Or being GMs or coaches or whatever.
Very, yeah. very skeptical about it. And now, John Lynch, the exception probably, was he great?
Probably.
Yeah,
yeah
okay.
John Lynch.
John Lynch
yeah.
has done a pretty darn good job of being the 49ers GM. But I'm very skeptical about great players being the general manager, being scouts, because they view the game a little bit differently. They view the game
right.
from a strictly a player's standpoint. Players that are less talented oftentimes have a chance to watch the game from the sideline because they're not
sure.
playing. So they watch it from a coach's standpoint. They watch it from a game film standpoint. I often believe that the best coach, GM, scout were bad players.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I don't know if you'd qualify this guy as bad, but it's one of the reasons why I think Doug Peterson is so effective as a head coach, because he's seen a lot of different guys succeed and he knows what it took to keep up when you're not a megastar player.
I would qualify Doug Peterson as a bad football player.
Okay.
Good football coach. Really good football coach. Bad football player.
Probably a good football player for like the world.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about percentages, he's probably in the top
1%.
Yeah, I was going to say 5, but yeah.
Yeah. But yes, for the NFL, granted, being a little obstreperous there. But yes, I think that is a problem that I saw with Jason Kidd being a head coach. Right? Like, why can't you just see the game that I do? Because no one does. Because no one sees the game like you do. right? Like, I think that those end up being issues. Like, Isaiah Thomas is a head coach.
Gretzky the same way.
Gretzky is a head coach. Perfect examples. I do think that it is way more likely that you see the Andy Reid's and the Doug Petersons of the world end up being more successful head coaches than players of greater name. But maybe Luke Kuechly knows exactly what he's looking for. Wishing him all the best on Matt Rhule's staff in Carolina. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard. Do you have an answer for Karate Mark's question? Did you see this on Twitter?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. I haven't had a chance to respond yet. Trying to think, because like my playing style, like
Karate Mark asked us who did we mimic the most as a kid from Major League Baseball at bat or on the field.
Yeah. So my playing style in actual baseball, like Little League and high school and all that, mm-hmm. was far different than my wiffle ball playing style.
Which is way more important.
Which is how I did a lot. That's where I would do a lot of my my mimicry. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, the Ichiro with the bat super high, or Craig Counsell, or, all the different stuff. That's a good question. I mean, I was pretty, I would say, just based on, more so based on where my hands were when I was hitting, as opposed to the stance.
Uh-huh.
But where my hands were, I would say it was a lot of Jason Worth.
Okay.
Kind of with the hands down to start.
Right.
So the reason that I did that was because there was a period where when I was locking too high.
Okay.
And I was basically tomahawking
chopping
everything.
Down.
Yeah, I was chopping down on everything. So I set the hands a little lower. And then when I locked, they were where I had previously started.
I see.
And that was getting me through the baseball a little bit quicker.
Okay.
Or a little bit more compactly.
I had the, I was a right-handed hitter, not a left-handed hitter. But I had the Ryan Howard, like, bat out before you got set up. Should have been the least intimidating thing of all time, because I am the worst baseball player that you've ever seen. And I gave it up. I think I did that as an 8-year-old. I was done by 9 and didn't return until, college, wiffle ball, slow pitch softball, that sort of thing. So yeah, totally, totally not intimidating. I was like in baseball, like the dude. Now, I wasn't like this, but it was reminiscent of the dude who shows up for pickup basketball with like the arm sleeve and the headband and like the full getup.
Of course,
is literally like chucking shots two handed over his head and slamming through the backboard. Like it's pretty much what it was like.
I will tell you this. So when we were kids, me and some of my buddies, if we would play wiffle ball, you would pick a team, right? And whoever you were, you had to like go through the lineup and be each of those guys, right? So we did that before, like one-on-one wiffle ball or two-on-two.
You had to be all of the guys.
Yeah, so you learned a lot of batting stances. Now, again, you learned a lot through video games and things like that.
But yeah.
we would watch teams, and if you would make like a bullpen move, right? You know,
uh-huh.
quote unquote, you go from yourself to yourself, but it's a reliever. You got to change your windup up.
Oh, of course you do.
The only thing you were allowed to do was, like, I'm lefty for both hitting and throwing.
Okay.
I didn't have to throw right-handed if I brought a righty into the game.
Oh,
you know
man.
What I mean?
Missed opportunity. That would have been fun. Because, I mean, obviously it would have stunk, but you get to reap the rewards of that on the other end.
Yeah, that's why you'd have to pick a team for me that was like lefty loaded.
So there's a league that still exists. They don't exist here anymore. The Atlantic League of Professional Baseball. And the ballpark limitations in some of these, unreal. Just absolutely unreal. So one of the teams was, and still is, got good friends there, really fun time there, in Lancaster. Lancaster
Barnstormers.
Yes. Clipper Magazine Stadium. Okay. So I'm trying to see if I can find the dimensions of Clipper Magazine Stadium, because when I say that this team was like 100% left-handed pitchers and 100% left-handed bats, like it was out of control.
So what you're saying is the right field porch was unbelievably short.
So short. And the, so you can see a picture of it if you go online. Like, pictures don't necessarily do it justice how short this was. And then teams would do it the other way. There was a team called the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs that had it the other way, where it was left field was really, really short porch, but it was a high wall. And that's what you had to do. You had to pick one of those teams, like Lancaster, you know, and just be Ross Peoples, you know, Dwayne Pollock. You know all these names.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, I mean, I am well-versed on my Atlantic League knowledge. Pretty sure Pedro Feliz played in that league at one time.
Yes. Yes, he did. The year before I took over in Camden. All right, you ready for this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Left field, 320 feet.
It's fairly normal.
Left center, 409.
It's pretty deep left center, but okay.
Deep left center. Yeah. So you're trying to stop right-handed power.
Sure, hitters, of course.
Right? Center field, 400.
Okay.
Right center, 363.
Okay, you're getting real shallow here.
Right field, 300 feet. With a 17-foot wall.
This is not an exaggeration. The summer league field that we played on for many, many seasons is 305. Like, we as in summer league guys from Ben Salem who were just trying to play baseball. 305 to right and left field.
Yep. Clipper Magazine Stadium, 300.
That's unreal.
Oh, it's so good. So good. 610-632-0975. That was a trip down memory lane. By the way, that's what people talk about, like, different baseball stadiums being, like, charming and stuff. And, like, how it's cool that there aren't dimensions. There should be minimums. Like, don't you think so? Don't you think that there should be, like, you can make stadiums as big or as small as you want in these various areas within these dimensional guidelines?
I think that there probably are, because you don't see any stadiums that are... I mean, for the most part, you don't see any stadiums nowadays that are, you know, built on city blocks like they used to be.
Uh-huh.
And you don't get the dimensions of the Polo Grounds anymore, which was, you know, like 500 feet to center field and
right.
240 to right. You know, pop-ups were home runs. So I think that there probably are some kind of unwritten something.
All right, so let's see here. On teams, parks constructed by pro teams after June 1, 1958. Must have a minimum distance of 325 between home plate and the nearest fence. And 400 between home plate and the nearest fence. So they have to be at least 400 straight away and at least 325 to the corners. I guess that's okay.
Yeah, they're pretty fair, I think.
You could still put it way, way out in left center. Like, just push it way, way back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any dimensional... extremities on that end. I mean, if you want to go 340 to 500, I guess you can. if you got the land to do it.
Just cut out seats there. Just have the field going.
You imagine sitting out in dead center field at 500 feet?
Yeah, with your binoculars watching the game.
Yeah, those tickets better cost about $4.
Unreal. Wow. All right, so there you go. Pole to pole, 325 at the minimum. After 1958. Maybe that's an excuse to not build new fields.
AKA, don't build the Polo Grounds again.
That's right. Don't build the Polo Grounds again. That's exactly right. 610-632-0975 is your phone number. Join the conversation. Yeah, John Rooney tweets in, I tried to model my game after Griffey until 14. Then high school through college, I was a catcher, and I tried to catch like Mike Matheny and then Yadier Molina. You can tell Molina learned under Matheny by catching style. Yadier Molina might be the best catcher I've ever seen.
Yadier Molina is, in my opinion, the best catcher in the history of baseball.
That's like, what he said Johnny his goal
Bench,
is.
Johnny Bench has better numbers. Yeah. Piazza's probably a better pure power hitter. There are certain things that guys do better, but I think that for... all around catching sake, I believe Yadier Molina is the... Actually, let me retract that.
Okay.
The second best catcher of all time.
Okay.
I believe that Ivan Rodriguez at his prime was the best catcher of all time.
All right. Okay. Got a good list there.
Those would be my top two. And then Bench probably three.
Everybody tried Griffey for a while. Everyone did. It was just too sweet to not try to emulate. But like everyone had a point where it's like, wow, this is really hard. It's really, really hard to do Griffey stuff like Griffey does.
You mean it's really difficult to whip a bat around like it's a toothpick?
While you're standing straight up in the air.
Like. I mean, I have my gripes with the Griffey swing love.
Yeah.
But to try to emulate that, it's nearly impossible.
So hard. 610-632-0975, your phone number to join the conversation. They are getting really good, though, on video games now. So if you're like, and especially as they have some of the like old-time players, the historical players, you can learn a lot about stances and swings and deliveries and stuff like that.
I will not exaggerate when I tell you I probably spend 45 minutes when I create my character, because I will go through literally every generic, every old school, every single one.
I have to find the perfect
to be like, okay, that's me. And then
who
I'm like,
do you
well,
come up with the most now? Or do you make it different based on who you're trying to create?
No, so I will only create myself.
Okay,
so
got it.
If I'm pitching, I will create what I used to do on the mound. If I'm a hitter, I will create how I stood in the box.
I got you.
So okay. They've gotten to the point where, you know, especially on the games like the show, you can pick a stance and then use your basically your XY
to tweak it.
Yeah, to tweak it. And it got to the point, and maybe this was a bad thing on me in real life, where I would get my guy in the stance that I want it to, and the game would be like, elbow contact certain. You need to move this. And I'm like, maybe my hands weren't right in real life. Did I do something wrong?
Because this looks exactly...
This is me.
I didn't do that. I was never that honest in those games. I mean, I would have liked to have tried to create, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, whatever, I would have liked to have created characters that like kind of had some semblance of my strengths and weaknesses and stuff. I never did. I was never that honest. I made freaking Felix Hernandez clones over and over and over and over again. That's what I did. It's like overpowering right-handed pitchers.
Didn't do the Dontrell high leg kick or anything like that?
Didn't even. So here's the problem, is that once you create a pitcher based on Hernandez or Halliday or somebody who threw like that, the timing is so clear and simple and easy that if you did anything else, all of a sudden the control slipped because you're not used to releasing buttons at the right times or whatever. Like, that's why some of those like old school, like I call them old timey deliveries, where it's like the dude like winding up like he's gonna punch somebody in a bar fight and stuff. They were fun for a while, but I'm like, I can't pitch like this.
Well, it takes too long to play the game. One pitch is like 30 seconds.
I can't do this. Like, I got things to do. At the time, I was like, I've got exams and stuff. Let's go to Tim in South Jersey next on the Fanatic. What's up, Tim?
There you go.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, so you guys were just talking about Ken Griffey. So I actually got to meet and hang out with Ken Griffey Sr. and Jr. a bunch of times.
Oh, awesome. How'd you get to do that?
So my dad is a sales rep for Bayer, but... So Ken Griffey Sr. had cancer a few years back, and they actually, Ken Griffey Sr. has a house up in Longhorn, PA, and my dad was a sales rep for his cancer drug. He got to meet with Ken Griffey and got to know him because they're from the same area.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so Sr. beat cancer, so I actually, like, he wanted to get to know, like, everyone who was involved in this process, like, from doctors to sales reps and stuff like that, and actually got to know all the people along the way.
Fantastic. That's awesome. So what was Junior like?
He was actually pretty cool. Like, sometimes you anticipate guys to be like cocky and whatnot, mm-hmm. but like whenever he was like at stuff like that, like it seemed like he was actually there for his dad. So he was actually a really cool guy. I met him when I was younger. I was like maybe like 12, 13, like the few years I met him, up to like 16 at the latest.
But uh-huh.
like, always a cool, like really nice guy, willing to talk to kids and stuff like that.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad that you had such a positive experience, man. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you sharing that because, I mean, he's right, Tyler, that sometimes when you meet guys, whether they're your heroes, you just know that they're big time or whatever, sometimes the experience is not nearly as pleasant as it could be. But obviously, in those circumstances, it's a little bit different than running up to a guy in a restaurant or something.
Right. And you know, a lot of times it comes with the territory for our job specifically, but I'm sure you get it a lot, too, from friends and things like that, you know. Oh, you've met X player? How are they?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, for the people that we work with, you know, at this station, they're all really good people.
Yeah, they're all great.
You know, like, I've never had an issue with anybody, you know, former athlete or a writer or anything like that. It just seems like we operate and work with some really good people.
I try to tell my friends not to ask, especially if they're fans, because, like you said, of the people that we have worked with, no problem.
Right.
But I've met more than just the people that we've
sure.
worked with. And I don't want my friends who say that they're in love with a certain player, and I have met this player and I did not have the most positive experience. I'd rather not be able to tell you that. I don't want to like shatter what your expectation is of this person. I try to tell people, leave that alone. I'll tell you about who all the great guys are.
Well, and the list is generally much longer.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
The good people versus the not. But you're right. You don't want to shatter somebody's, you know, boyhood dream or something like that.
Just leave that alone. I want to create the next syndrome from The Incredibles, you know? Mr. Incredible is a jerk. Nobody ever talks about that at the beginning of the movie.
Kind of a bad person.
Totally bad person. Totally deserved it. 610-632-0975.
I know he was a good dad.
Jeez. We got to do a Disney podcast or something like that so that, you know, three people would listen that haven't turned off their radios now that we're talking about The Incredibles. Okay, coming up later in this hour, we will hear, we'll probably do that next, actually. Mark Zumoff joined Tyrone Johnson and the rest of the Mike Missinelli show earlier today. We'll get to that next. And then more of your phone calls as well. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Hanging out together until 10 o'clock. And obviously, we've been discussing the return-to-play proposal from the NBA, and who better to discuss that than Mark Zumoff, the voice of the Sixers, who joined Tyrone Johnson earlier this afternoon. Really interesting, enlightening conversation. Here's how that sounded.
Mr. Mark Zumoff on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. How are you today, sir?
My good friend, I am great, and it's good to be back to work in that capacity, and hopefully we'll see you and Crystal on Sixers Outsiders as well.
I really hope so. Now, we have some more details. Obviously, July 31st is the date. They say that June 15th will be the day that the international players return. They will all report on June 24th for almost like a mini camp type of situation. And on the 22nd of June, that's when the coronavirus testing, the regular testing, will begin. So there were a lot of people who were worried about the safety of this situation. Testing for a full month out ahead of time and beginning some isolation, do you think that'll help mitigate some of the health concerns that people have?
I'm not a doctor. But mm-hmm. as I view it on the surface, I would say certainly any kind of testing has to be of benefit. I would also think that down the road, there'll be more testing. There'll be consistent and constant testing. I think that has to be part of it. So yes, while the NBA did announce that they're going to try to resume the season on or around July 31st, I mean, my goodness, there are still so many logistical things to be worked out as it relates to the health and safety of the players. I can't imagine what must be going on right now, but I'm sure there are a lot of people doing a lot of work to make sure that this thing can go off and go off as safely as possible.
You're absolutely right. They say training camp would begin June 30th, hypothetically, assuming everything goes safely, and then July 7th is when all the teams would then travel down to Orlando. It will be very interesting to see how this plays out. It was 29-1 on the vote. Do you think that it was, what do you think was the main motivating factor? Was it the $900 million for the playoffs? Was it just wanting to have some normalcy? Was it all of the above? Why do you think the NBA has been so able to come up with the deal while Major League Baseball, for example, has just been completely impossible for them to come up with a deal?
I can't really comment on the baseball situation. I'm more familiar, Tyrone, with my own backyard.
Right.
I know that Adam Silver is a great leader. He's a great commissioner. He has always made it a point to engage the players' union, whether it's on social issues and certainly on economic issues. I know that the owners in the person of Adam Silver and his staff have been in regular touch with Michelle Roberts and the NBA Players Association to get this done, and they will be as they dot the I's and cross the T's here going forward. So I still think there's some work to be done, but listen, the NBA A is a part of our fabric. We love the game. We love the game as fans. It's a part of my livelihood, obviously. So I'm happy that it's back, and that has to be a driving factor. And it's a business, so that has to be a driving factor. To not have games, to not be able to get the television revenue, to cost yourself some branding because you're going to take even more months off and not finish the season, I think are all things that legislated positively toward getting this thing going again. And I am elated with today's announcement. I can't wait to get started again.
I'm completely with you. Shifting to the Sixers, they're the sixth seed right now. You have like the eight, the plan for the eight regular season games. They could move up as high as four, or who knows, realistically, it seems like four would be realistic. As a man who watched every dribble of every game all season long, are you more comfortable with them avoiding the Bucks in that second round possibly, or would you be okay with them getting the four seed, perhaps getting quote-unquote home court advantage in that first round and having to see those Bucks in the second round?
You know, Tyrone, this is such a tough question to answer only because this is so totally new.
Yeah.
I think that if you're a coach, let's say, you can go back and take a look at the analytics and say to yourself, okay, what was trending in the right direction? What was not trending in the right direction? Do we take these eight games to tweak some lineups and that sort of thing? There are many unanswerable questions. You're talking about now, how will players react to playing without fans, playing in a closed environment, playing with the fear that there's the possibility of infection? I'm not even talking about the Bucks for a second, okay? I'm just talking about, you know, how are people going to react with all of these unknowns?
Yeah.
You know, I did have one thought in that there, when I think back on how the regular season played out and how great the Sixers were at home and how subpar they were on the road, well, the playing field here now is level.
Yeah.
So you're not playing in Milwaukee's arena. You're playing the Bucks in a gym without fans. That's in neutral territory. How does that affect things? You know, there are certain circumstances whereby it's not just going to be about matchups, but, you know, these other factors that are taking place. So I think if you're the Sixers and you've been aiming for the playoffs, and now you've been reinforced with other players that you've been able to pick up along the way, I think you have to say to yourself, sooner or later, we're going to have to meet the best, whether it's the finals or the conference finals. So we might as well take the guys who we have on our roster and put them up against whoever it is that we face and see how we make out.
That's a good point. And if they were to move up, that means in those eight games, this new roster, like this whole new season, that means they're playing good basketball. And I guess maybe playing good basketball, entering these new playoffs, maybe that's more important than anything else. Maybe this team, if they can get everybody healthy and everybody back together, I know you talked about it a lot about how few games this team really got to play together. Maybe if they're all together and playing well for those eight games, they go 6-2 or something, 7-1, they're going with momentum, and it doesn't matter who they play because they're playing their game at a high level.
Or maybe to some extent, does the coaching staff decide, all right, we're going to take these eight games and maybe experiment with some lineup changes? You know, I know that for that one game or a couple of games, at least, Al Horford came off the bench, then he was put back in the starting lineup. That has to be the most obvious thing to consider. I would think that if anything, maybe the coaches put more premium on experimentation and tweaking and less on trying to get, quote unquote, the best possible seed or to avoid the Bucks or what have you, and then let the chips fall where they may in the postseason.
That makes a lot of sense. We're talking to Mark Zumoff. Everybody knows play-by-play for the Sixers on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Shake Milton's a guy that fans call about all the time. Whenever we talk about the Sixers, he comes up because people – people were down on Al Horford towards the end of the year. Fans were down on him, just speaking from a fan's perspective. And they were impressed with Shake Milton against the Clippers. And he had a nice little spurt, and then the season gets paused. Do you think it's possible that Shake Milton can be this wild card coming back, or is it just way too much to ask for a guy like him to step in and actually play like playoff minutes for a contender?
It's a really good question, and I would say this. It's great to have options because the Sixers went out and got a couple of wing players before the trade deadline of Glenn Robinson and Alec Burks, and now they have a wing player who has, I'm sure, more than exceeded their expectations, certainly for this season. I do want to go back to the decision to acquire Al Horford and how good I think it looked to most fans in the summer.
Yes.
Where you knew that you were going to get a limited amount of games out of Joel Embiid, where you thought that if they started next to each other, that Horford with his high post passing and his outside game could potentially be a complement. Now perhaps the analytics or the results have shown you otherwise, and perhaps putting a guy like Shake Milton in the starting lineup and, let's say making Ben Simmons more of a point power forward than anything else would be the way to go and bring Horford off the bench. And then something we haven't even talked about is getting Ben Simmons up to speed.
Yeah.
I mean, not only has he been in the same boat with the rest of the players, but he missed, a good month or so before all this started with his back problems. And he hasn't even played two-on-two basketball yet, let alone five-on-five. So I think the most immediate concern right now is to get him to full speed. And then, do you tweak the lineup? Well, I would think that that eight-game regular season finale is going to be play a big part in determining whether or not you tweak the lineup or not. But yeah, I think it is certainly something that the coaches would consider. Absolutely.
Yes. And my next question was actually, and final question was going to be about Ben Simmons, because Joel Embiid, we won't know about his conditioning until the game start. We'll hear things, but we won't know for sure. But that Ben Simmons back, a lot of people thought, well, this is good because this gives him a lot of time to rest. And maybe if the season doesn't get interrupted, he doesn't come back because of the back. But you just mentioned he hasn't played any basketball since February, basically. It was the game after the All-Star break against the Bucks, and we really haven't seen him play any basketball. He hasn't played much basketball at all since then. Would it be unrealistic or unfair to ask him to perform at the highest of high levels after this long layoff?
It's a really good question. I've been actually thinking about this, and while many players have been, like many of us, quarantined, secluded, what have you, and away from basketball, Ben Simmons was clear to have some level of physical therapy during all of this.
Yeah.
So will that help in his conditioning? That is the one thing, Tyrone, that is controllable, is your fitness level, the fitness level of your players.
Yeah.
The rest of it, how they react to this new atmosphere, playing on a neutral court without fans and everything else, that's something that you're going to have to find out as it reveals itself. But having players in shape and at a good fitness level is certainly something that can be controlled. Ben Simmons has shown, except for this back injury, has shown a remarkable ability to play big minutes, to recover quickly from injury, previous injuries. I think the previous two seasons missed only one or two games in each season. So, with Ben, you never know. I'm sure the Sixers will want to be careful, as any team would with an all-star, and make sure that they don't rush things. They're going to have to work carefully with their medical personnel. And those 3 weeks, you say, arriving July 7th and playing on or around the 31st, that's going to tell them a lot. And maybe those eight games they will use to kind of ease him back into it. And then hopefully by the playoffs, we'll be able to play his normal 35 minutes.
Yeah, I hope so. Listen, I'm very excited that they voted to come back. I can't wait to hear you and Ala get back to doing games. Thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it, Mark.
All right, there he is, Mark Zumoff, joining Tyrone Johnson and the Mike Misnelli Show today, discussing the Sixers' perspective on the restart and everything that kind of goes along with the NBA's return to play proposals there. Good stuff from Mark Zumoff. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show. Coming up, final segment. More of your phone calls. We'll take a walk around the show, plus the return of One More Thing. All of that is coming your way next right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Final segment of the program. It's been a fun show today, Tyler, but not fun if you are a baseball fan in particular, as we discuss the return to play initiatives. And to kind of sum things up, you and I are kind of in agreement. We're often in agreement about a lot of things, but this one as well. Major League Baseball and baseball as a sport kind of behind the eight ball a little bit here if any kind of cancellation of a season takes place, not over any kind of public health crisis, but because players and owners can't figure out how to split up the money and figure out something that works. You run the risk of doing some irreparable damage to the casual fan base.
Yeah, I think that there is a widespread understanding if MLB would have come out, like you said, a couple months ago and said, listen, we don't feel safe playing. We still don't have enough information about the coronavirus and the spread of the virus and all of that kind of stuff, incubation periods, all of that kind of stuff. I don't know if any baseball fan or sports fan would have batted much of an eye. They probably would have just said, okay, we get it. It stinks, but we get it. When you start talking dollars, fans don't want to hear that, especially fans that are, who have lost their jobs because of coronavirus, who are under tough times, who are looking for an outlet for some enjoyment. And I don't blame the players nearly as much as the owners, but I don't know how many people think the way that I or feel the way that I feel. I think that there's probably a lot of people that are a very blanket statement saying baseball, the entity of baseball, is doing something wrong.
Yeah, we explored that a fair amount over the early portion of the program before. We also kind of evaluated where the Flyers stand now with the new announcement that reseeding will be happening during the NHL playoff bracket setup. Or I guess it won't really be a bracket if you've got that going on. You've got a reseeding situation. So the Flyers now with the potential, if they are able to get up into that top spot, that they would be able to take down perhaps the Montreal Canadiens instead of the winner of the 8-9 game there. So, or the 8-9 series, I should say. That's going on there. And of course, the Sixers in good shape as the NBA season would resume. However, it's still a little unclear. There are still some things to work out dates-wise and that sort of thing when it comes to resuming things in Orlando, Florida at Walt Disney World Resort. However, as I said before, unlike Major League Baseball, those two are earning my eyeballs. I don't care that things are uncertain. I understand that we're all kind of dealing with the same circumstances. I heard a rail against a company, against Amazon earlier today. And it struck me as strange because I thought, you know what, there are some companies that are going to adapt better than others. And Amazon's creating something that, you know, I can't speak for all of you, has improved me dramatically during times that I can't go out and shop and things like that. It's helped me out a lot. Similarly, the NBA and the NHL, if they are willing to think outside the box in order to bring me live sports programming in a way that is safe for the players, safe for the staff, and safe for the coaches, I'm cool with it and I appreciate it, as opposed to just kind of sitting there in neutral. And then, of course, we also talked about the stance emulations. Did you come up with concrete here, Tyler? Did you come up with with what you were doing, or did you create something that was kind of all your own?
So I think that for me, we talked about the hand position of Jason Wirth. Also, I it was kind of an emulation of the Chase Utley pre-pitch. You know what I'm talking about?
The low wave.
Yeah, basically, it's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
That was me until, so I found that it was a little bit easier to hit that way when a pitcher was in the stretch, because as soon as they came set, I knew that was when it was time to pick the hands up.
Right.
Pitchers, smart pitchers, I've run into a couple of them.
Slide started.
Well, not slide step from the stretch, but from the windup.
Yeah.
Started to quick pitch me.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, because they basically picked that up, you know, and I couldn't get my hands loaded in time to get a good swing out.
You're like, come on, I'm doing a thing.
Yeah, I'm trying my thing here.
Give me a break. That's wrong. I will say, though, with the news being announced that the NBA is going to return, that does mean a little bit of bad news for basketball fans across the world. That leads us to the often imitated, never duplicated, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
Yeah, we've taken a break from one more thing for a little while. Going to bring it back to close out my time with you this week. Following the announcement that there would only be 22 teams resuming in the NBA, the Atlanta Hawks are not one of those teams. So therefore, Vince Carter, who announced at the beginning of the season that this would be his last season, has played his last game. And I have to admit, it struck me on a level that I wasn't ready for, because I felt a similar feeling earlier this year. The seniors on the Penn men's basketball team completed their final regular season game, punched their ticket to the Ivy League tournament, and then everything kind of shut down, and they had played their last games without realizing that it was going to be their last games. And that struck me as sad. And like, even though it was a long, distinguished career for these guys, that they still felt that they had more to do. I have to assume that that's true of Vince Carter as well. A guy who announces ahead of time that it's going to be his final season, that's kind of like going into your senior season. But still, just like them, not having the opportunity to know that this was your last time stepping out onto the court. And it's a shame, because I think the Vinsanity closing tour, especially since the Hawks weren't very good, the Vinsanity closing tour could have rivaled Jeter's and Kobe's and some of the other guys who were closing theirs out. He doesn't get that chance.
Yeah, I would agree with you pretty wholeheartedly on this one. It's tough to watch a guy who was, I mean, a significant contributor for many, many, many seasons. And you talk about still probably the greatest dunk of all time.
Oh, yeah.
In the Olympic Games. This guy was just a world-class player. And I think that the one thing that I more so than, you know, going to this city and playing your final game and probably playing his final game in Toronto or, mm-hmm. you know, all of that. The one thing that I think is going to miss out on the most is all of these players get a chance in their final game to be substituted for the last time.
Sure.
And, you know, get that applause as he comes off the court for the final time. Hug his coach, hug his teammates. That kind of stinks that he's not going to get that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I still remember watching him in that Sixers-Raptors series. And if you would have told me that he was going to play for 22 years the way that he played, there's just no way. So testament to the longevity, everything that you'd want in a basketball player is Vince Carter. And it's a shame that his career is ending this way, but it's been a very full career. It's fascinating to me, because I would bet that my son is not going to think of Vince Carter as an all-time NBA great, and probably he shouldn't, even though he's a great player. He's probably not in the upper tier of the best players ever. But when you think about the impact you can make in a 22-year career, when you played above the line for most of that, he's a guy that I'm going to remember for a really long time.
Yeah, I think that the unfortunate part about the next generation is correct there. There's always a handful of players, whether they be on your team or the team you rooted against or just a random team, that is, you're going to sit and go, man, that guy was great. And your kids or their kids are going to go, really? You're going to see the posters, right?
Right. I know his name.
Yeah, you're going to see the posters. You're right. Going to see all of the dunks. But are you going to know the impact that he had?
Right. And well said. Well said. There you go. That is the often imitated, never duplicated, and indomitable, because it's back. One more thing. Congratulations to Vince Carter, half man, half amazing. Officially complete after a 22-year career. Eight All-Star appearances, Rookie of the Year in 99, Slam Dunk Contest performance in 2000, and then, of course, like we said, the Olympic dunk that literally ended careers. Like, that was something pretty remarkable. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in, my co-host for the evening. Want to remind everyone else that, as long as we were talking about seniors, for thousands of high school athletes, this is the season that wasn't. All of their hard work and achievements on and off the field were stolen away, but we've got you covered. 97.5 The Fanatic and ESPN want to award a local athlete an honorary ESPY award. Go to 97.5thefanatic.com right now and nominate a local outstanding student athlete whose achievements were not rewarded. On Monday, June 15th, we will start the voting process to award a Philadelphia ESPN ESPY. The winner will be announced Friday, June 19th. Again, go to 97.5thefanatic.com to nominate someone and for more details. The official honorary ESPY award is brought to you by Capital One. Tune in to the ESPYs on Sunday, June 29th at 9 p.m. on ESPN. This is all presented by 97.5 The Fanatic and ESPN. Thank you, Tyler Zuli. Outstanding job producing as per usual. I will talk to you guys on Tuesday. Everybody be safe. Have fun. Thanks to all the callers and tweeters. I'll talk to you next time right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.